Thank you, David. I appreciate that. You know, this whole past week, I've kind of had a reoccurring thought in my mind. I guess you could say it's a thought. I guess you could say it's a feeling. It's a passion. You can call it a lot of different things. But I've had this reoccurring thought, feeling, passion in my mind. God is love. You know, he doesn't have love. He doesn't do love. It's not so much a verb for him because it's what he is. It is the nature of who he is. We talk about the nature of God. We talk about the characteristics of God. Well, if you told me to think of the one characteristic of God that I think of most often, it's that God is love. And in fact, in the Bible, it tells us that multiple times, but the Bible sometimes goes a little bit farther to not just say that God loves or anything like that, but in John 3:16, which is probably the most famous verse that addresses this, it says that God so loves. Okay, now I don't know if you guys know anybody, and you might be this parent yourself, but there are some parents that just so love their kids. You know, I'm talking about they're the parents that are at the soccer game that are running down the side and they're saying, "Go, score the goal, score the goal." They're the ones who are going crazy. They get the embroidered hats for their kids, and you know, they don't just bring the orange slices for the meal for the team. They are bringing like the entire dinner, fried chicken, KFC, wedges, all that good stuff. They are the parents that so love the kids. And now some of you are thinking to yourselves, yeah, I know a parent or two like that. Or some of you are thinking to yourselves, I am that parent. Oh my goodness, he's talking about me. You know, I can tell you right now for a fact, I had those parents, okay? Maybe they weren't the ones running up and down the sideline, or they weren't the ones getting the embroidered hats or anything like that, but I had parents who really showed me what it means to be so loved. And not just parents, but aunts and uncles and grandparents and brothers and sisters and cousins. I had a huge family of just people who so loved me. And not just me, but my brothers, my sisters, all of each other. And I consider myself extremely, extremely blessed to have that. To be able to look back on my family and think about how blessed I was to be loved by them and just every way, always be supported, always being there for me. My dad coached multiple sports teams for me. He was always involved doing whatever it seemed like he could. Both my parents were always volunteering in whatever area it seemed like. I could not get away from them. They were always there at church, I tell you. They were just always, always around, and it wasn't because they had to keep an eye on me. Trust me, they did have to keep an eye on me. I got into trouble a lot as a kid, but they had to be there for me. They had to love me constantly because it's who they were. Love for me wasn't something that they did. It wasn't something they had. It's just something that was there for me, for my brother, for my sister. Something they had for each other. And this, in a way, they kind of showed me exactly what God's love is. And like I said, not just my parents, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, my brothers and sisters, my cousins, my you know, anybody. They did exactly what they could to show me what love is. And I believe that God calls each and every one of us to that. He loves us himself. Obviously, God is love. He loves us himself. But he requires for us to completely show that love to other people. And when I think of this thought, when I think of all of this, I think about one person in the Bible, and that's Hosea. All right, now you might have thought of Jesus. Yeah, that's the cop-out answer. Good job. All right, but I think of Hosea. Now, I don't know if very many of you are familiar with the man of Hosea, but Hosea was a prophet in the Old Testament. Okay, Hosea was one of those guys, the minor prophets that maybe you just kind of glance over when you're reading the Bible or something like that. Maybe you don't see him at first or anything like that. But I'll tell you right now, the minor prophets, the one of the prophets that Hosea is, they were my favorite people to read in the Bible. If you don't believe me, go read the minor prophets tomorrow. You'll love it. There's some strange stuff that happens. But dare I say, Hosea had the strangest assignment given from God. Because prophets weren't just given a prophecy to speak, but they are also given a prophecy to perform. God told them to go say something, but then oftentimes he also called them to live it out themselves. Because as some people might say, talk is cheap, action speaks louder than words. And so God called these men, many like this, Hosea and others as well, to go and to perform the prophecy. So this book of Hosea, it happened about 750 years before Jesus ever came to earth. 750 years before Jesus ever came to earth, Hosea gives us the exact picture of why Jesus came to earth. He was in the northern part of Israel. This was just 200 years after northern Israel and southern Israel had been cut off. All right, they were completely detached from one another. All right, and this book here is about 20 to 25 years of Hosea's life, all condensed into this book called Hosea. So let's just get right on into it. Hosea chapter 1, we're going to skip verse 1 because there's a lot of names there that I'm not going to be able to pronounce very well. I can do my best, but they're weird. Verse 2 says, "When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, 'Go marry a promiscuous woman and have children with her, for like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord.' So he married Gomer," yes, Gomer, "daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son." Okay, now can you imagine the shock that must have happened to Hosea? Hosea was a prophet. Hosea was a man of God. Many thought of him to be one of the best men of God, one of the men who was most connected to God and all of the nation. And he's called to go marry this woman that many people would just look at and they would say, "Well, we're not even going to talk to her because she has so much dishonor. She is so, for lack of better words, gross," they would say. Okay? They would just completely write her off. And so when Hosea probably even went to her father to blame and said, "Hey, I'd like to marry your daughter." Normally, you kind of had to work for it back then. All right, guys get off easy now. They just take the father out to dinner and they say, "Hey, can I marry your daughter?" And they say, "Yeah, sure," sometimes. All right, but back then, they had to work for it. Well, this woman probably had Gomer. She probably had so much dishonor, so much hurt in her life. She probably brought so much bad stuff to their family that the father most likely said, "You want her? Have her. Take her right now." I kid you not. He probably did. He probably said, "Take her. She's out of here. I don't want her." And to be able to have somebody say that, I can imagine why Gomer would have kind of a hard life when even your family, of all people, would treat you like that. And so this marriage, this is a prophetic, this happened, but this is a bit of prophecy, a bit of poetry here, and this marriage is the prophetic symbol that is used between God and Israel. So we're using this as kind of some poetry here, but it's also God's poetry in action, if that makes sense. All right, and many believe that when they got married, because he took Gomer and they lived together, she was now his wife. When they got married, they were very happy together. They seemed to be very happy. Many scholars believe that Gomer actually probably resented of her old ways and just completely lived a righteous life. You know, she could have been the wife in the front row when Hosea was preaching, you know, saying, "Preach, brother, preach." You know, he could have been the girl up there. She could have been his right-hand man. Many believe that she was doing exactly what she needed to do. Well, then along comes a son, and things start to kind of go downhill from there. Many believe that that's when Gomer actually started to resent Hosea's ministry. That's when she really started to kind of say, "Well, Hosea, I don't want to be a part of this anymore." Or maybe she didn't feel like he was giving enough time to her. He was giving too much time to the kids or anything like that. And many believe that the next two kids probably weren't even Hosea's, because Gomer had started to live this life completely away from Hosea, resenting him, that he's now in this situation where he doesn't even know if two of his three children are actually even his. And to make it worse, on top of that, Gomer just leaves. And the Bible doesn't tell us exactly how she left. It could have been in an argument. It could have been, she went to go pick the kids up or something like that. It could have been he woke up in the middle of the night, or it could have been he woke up in the middle of the morning and he looks over at her. She's not there. He could have went to the kitchen and looked for her. She's not there. He could have went to see if she was in one of the kids' rooms or something like that. She wasn't there. And so now, arguably the most well-known, maybe the most famous man in all of Israel — Israel's a big, big group of people — and all of this place and all of these people has now been left and is now a single father with three kids because his wife decided to just up and leave. Without him knowing it, without anything like that, she leaves. And so not only would that take an emotional toll on any regular person to be left by their husband or their wife, but to have three kids in that situation, like I said, two of those kids might not even have been his. To be left in that situation, and also you're supposed to be leading a large group of people towards God at the same time, the depression, the sadness, the heartache must have been excruciating for him. It must have been terrible for him to try and go through. I can't tell you exactly how he felt. The Bible doesn't tell us exactly how he felt or anything like that, but I can tell you that if that happened to me, and I think if you're honest with yourself, if that happened to you, the heartache would be terrible. And so Hosea is left with two options at this point. He can either end his marriage and he can find himself another wife. He can find somebody else, maybe somebody who doesn't resent his ministry, maybe somebody who will stick around, maybe who's somebody he can be confident that he has children with. Okay, he can end that marriage and he can find somebody else. Or he can go find Gomer and he can go renew that marriage with her. Now, it wouldn't be much of a story if he just ended the marriage here, but there is much, much more to the story. And in Hosea's depression, this is what God has to say to him in chapter 3, verse 1. The Lord said to me, said to Hosea, "Go, show love to your wife again, though she is loved by another man and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes." So God is telling him here, go and find your wife, go and love her. Even though she didn't love you, left you when you were loving her, go and love her again. And this isn't really a big part of it, but I just want to point out that sometimes, and I've heard my friends say this, I've heard me say this multiple times, we've all said it before probably, I wish God would just tell me what to do. I wish God would just show me what it is he wants me to do, what it is that needs to happen right now. Well, be careful what you wish for, because as Hosea got there, having God give you the direct answer of, hey, you need to do this, is not always the easy answer, and it's not always the answer we want to hear. But Hosea, he's a man of God, and in his sadness, and maybe whenever he was happiness, whatever, God's answer was hard, but Hosea knew that he was devoted to God and that he had to go out and do what God gave him to do. So Hosea set out to show his wife love after Gomer had left him to go find this fake love that she was searching for. Because at this point in time, Israel did not think of love the same way as God thought of love, or maybe as a normal person might think of love, we might think. They actually had three primary ways that they sought after love. They thought, if you do this to me, this means you love me, or this means I am loved. If my parents don't do this, I'm not loved by them. If my wife, my husband doesn't do this, I'm not loved by them. If my parents don't do this, I'm not loved by them. You felt love in Israel if this happens, because they had this mixed up idea of love. Number one was love is purchased. That's what they believe. They believe if you love me, you will purchase things for me. You will purchase what I need. You will purchase me. You will purchase. You will spend your money. You will spend your possessions on me. The second one was self-gratification. They said, if you give me what I want, you don't give me what you think I want or what you think I need. You give me what I want, and that means that you love me. Because at this point in time, they would much rather have somebody give them what they want rather than somebody give them what they need or what they need to hear or something like that. And the last one was their love was materialistic. Their love was, you know, if you give me the most things, if you give me a big house, if you give me this, that, and the other, then that means that you love me. And so most likely Gomer had set off to find this with somebody else because she didn't feel this fake love that Israel had made up. She didn't feel this fake love from Hosea. Now, just a little side point, this is just me, but these ideas of fake love sound a lot like a country today that we live in, just personally to me. Now, I wouldn't say that all of us think that, because I don't know each and every one of us, But I would say that at some point in time, our minds might have been poisoned to think that this is love, that love is purchased, it's self-gratification, it's materialistic. But that is not true love. That is not love from God. And in this moment, God decides that he must demonstrate real love. Not just to Gomer, not just to Hosea, but to everyone. Like I said, this is God's poetry in action. He decides that he must show his real love. He must demonstrate it through Hosea so that other people can see it. Because Jesus hasn't come yet. This was 750 years before Jesus comes. But he must demonstrate that real love so that others can see it and realize this love that we thought we knew was completely fake. And that there's real love out there from a heavenly Father. And so Hosea now does this. Hosea goes and he searches for his wife. The Bible doesn't speak a lot about what his search is like, but when I'm thinking about his search, I can't help but think about how terrible that search must have been. He had to have gone to the shadiest of street corners. He had to have gone to the places that no man of God back then would have ever dared go to, because his wife was deep in sin. His wife was deep in the valley, deep in the darkness. And so this man of God had to venture into these depressing, hard areas, hurtful areas, sinful areas. He had to venture there. And the people he had to talk to, he couldn't dial her on the cell and say, hey, where you at? He couldn't search her online and say, oh, where's Gomer at, or anything like that. She didn't have a tracker in her phone. He had to go out and he had to search for her. He had to ask people. He had to say, do you know where my wife is? You're still married? I saw her. But you're still married? No, yes, we are married, but do you know where she is? And so Hosea is searching for Gomer. He sets out to find her, and he finally finds her at what can only be best described as an auction, where she is up on the stage, and many believe that he came in while she was up on the stage at this time with men bidding for the right to have her. And at this point in time, Hosea has to make a choice. He can't let her be bought by somebody else. So Hosea, for lack of better words, he begins to start bidding on his own wife. Even though she has left him, she is still his wife. And men are sitting there bidding on her, and Hosea's only thing that he can do is he can bid everything he has on her. See, she's up for sale at this point. And we read in verse 2 what happens. In verse 2, it tells us, so I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and about a homer and a lethic of barley. Now, if you know the Old Testament real well, you know that 30 pieces of silver was how much a slave cost. So he didn't even pay the full ransom. What this says is that he didn't have enough money to pay for her. And so what he did was, not only did he give all the silver he had in his pocket, all the money he had, but he said, let me give you an IOU. I'll give you this wheat. A homer and a lethic of barley was about 430 pounds of barley. Now back then, that was a lot. Because he had to overpay, because he didn't have it all the way, he had to overpay for her. So Hosea paid for Gomer when she was already his. He bid for her, he paid for her when she was already his. She ran away, but she was already his. And like I said, this was God's way of demonstrating real love. And in a way, when Jesus came and died on the cross, God paid for us when we were already his. Because we ran away just like Gomer. When I read this story, I don't read this story as Hosea and Gomer. I read this story as God and me. I read this story as God, as Hosea, and I'm the Gomer. I'm the Gomer that ran away to find the fake love. I'm the Gomer that said, I got to go find this other love. Because at some point in life, whether we want to admit it or not, we've all been that Gomer. And there's only some of us that might have actually accepted Hosea when he came for us, accepted God. You see, in this whole story, I'm constantly seeing Gomer as myself and Hosea as God. and God sending Jesus Christ to this earth to pay for my sins, to pay for me running away. When I could have just stayed. When I could have done that. But finally, after Hosea pays for Gomer, Gomer comes down off the stand, and I'm sure that Hosea embraces Gomer, probably kisses her all over and hugs her, and she's probably crying on his shoulder, and it has to be a beautiful moment for us at the time. The men who were in the room probably thought, oh, whatever, just get on with the next bidding. But it had to have been a beautiful moment, and we get this moment, and what happens in verse 3? In verse 3, it says this, "Then I told her, 'You are to live with me many days, and you must not be a prostitute to be intimate with any man, and I will behave the same way towards you.'" That's essentially Hosea renewing his wedding vows with her. He's renewing what she had broken, but he himself had never broken, and he vowed to bring back. Verse 4 says, "For the Israelites will live many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred stones, without ephod or household gods. Afterward, the Israelites will return to seek the Lord, their God, and David, their king. They will come trembling to the Lord and to his blessings in the last days." You see, what this is Hosea giving his prophecy at this point, saying this is the future. There is a king to come. There is a king who is going to do as I did. There is a king from the line of David. He refers to David because they had no idea who Jesus was at this time, but he refers to David to say, David has a king in his line who's going to come save you as I have saved Gomer. And that king is Jesus Christ. He has come and he has died on the cross. He has paid for us. So the words that Hosea is speaking right now are true 750 years later. And still, today, 2,000 years later after that, we sit in our seats and we look up at the stage while this one guy or two guys, three guys, whatever, talks about Jesus Christ and the love he has for us. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. You see, the names in the Old Testament have a meaning. Every name has a meaning. You know, for some of you, you might realize that the name Isaac means laughter. Okay, that's a regular story where people know. Every name had a meaning. Well, the name Hosea meant salvation. The name Gomer meant completion. So this idea that when Hosea, salvation, met Gomer was finally complete. That God's salvation was finally complete when those two came together. Hosea is demonstrating God's love, not just for Gomer, but God's love for you, for me, for everyone in this world. Because once you have experienced being so loved, you cannot help but let others experience being so loved. That's why I always had such a great upbringing. That's why I can stand up here and speak about how I was so loved by my parents, by my aunts and uncles, my grandma and grandpa, everyone. That's why I can speak about that, because all of them had experienced being so loved. All of them have experienced the love of Christ and knew him. Only once we have experienced that love are we able to help others experience that love as well. But I warn you right now, that love is messy. That love will never be clean, because sin pokes its way in, doubt starts to creep in, and guilt will stay there. So that love is going to be messy. It was messy for Gomer and Hosea, and it'll be messy for all of us. There will be pain. It happens. See, if we cannot see the importance of showing love, we have not yet completely experienced that love that God has for each and every one of us. God has entrusted us to complete this idea of so love in our world today. Not just with our friends, not just with our family, but with every single person we meet. God has entrusted us, imperfect people, to display his perfect love. If you don't believe me, 1 John chapter 4 speaks on it quite a bit. It says in 1 John chapter 4, verse 11, it says, "Dear friends, since God so loved us," that word there, so loved, "we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. You see, we cannot give so love on our own. Giving love on our own is impossible, because God is love. We have to have love, or we have to have God be a part of the equation of love. But when we allow God into our lives to give that so love, then we are able to complete his love. Because humans today, all of us, we're not going to feel God so love just by reading it in the Bible, just by getting the feeling when we pray, just by being dunked under the water or anything like that. We're going to get that feeling from God himself and from those around us by completing that love through us. You see, today I saw a great tragedy today. I saw a car crash, as many of you know, and it was very difficult to witness, and it was difficult to stick around for. Got out of there, and still in my mind a little bit, but, you know, it's things like that. People say it's things like that why they can't believe that God is real. How such a loving father would allow something like that to happen. But I don't think that's it at all. I don't think it's the hurricanes or the car crashes or cancer or anything like that. I don't think it's that people really have a hard time understanding God or knowing God. I think it's that because every single day, those who God has entrusted his perfect love with fail his perfect love each and every day. Is there a misunderstanding of God's love because of earthly tragedies, or is it because those who God has entrusted to complete his love? Is it because of you? Is it because of me? Is it because of all of us? I don't tell you that to get you down. I tell you that for you to understand that God has done his part. God has sent Jesus Christ for us, and he still is with us today. But when he's with us, that's why we can complete his love to those around us, not just our friends, not just our family, not just our coworkers or anything like that, but every person that we meet, every person that we come in contact with. So I would challenge you today to stop waiting on God to show his love to other people and realize that today is the day where you can get out and you can show your love to other people, because your love is God's love. It should be. It should be. And if you have not experienced that love, then you know that today might be that day where you could experience it for the first time. Let's pray.